My name is Tony Litt. I'm the MD of Sunrise Radio, and it's my immense pleasure to bring you the official Sunrise Radio podcast. We are the number one commercial Asian station in the United Kingdom, with many firsts to our name, and we continue to be the voice of British Asians who have given us their love and loyalty over 30 years. It's a legacy we cherish and a responsibility that we don't take lightly. Our aim has always been to entertain the listeners with the best of Bollywood and Bhangra, while also addressing their concerns. A real voice for the community, a vibrant community, and a great nation. We are proud to be British and Asian. This podcast is a compilation of some of the things we do on the station, with a stellar lineup of presenters who each have their own personality and style. It's entertaining, informative, engaging, and we hope you will enjoy it here as a podcast if you are unable to tune in to the radio. Don't forget to subscribe and tell your family and friends about this podcast. And do leave us a comment on what you think. We'd love to hear from you. All the best always. Team Sunrise. The UK's biggest
station mix. Sunrise Radio. This is Anushka Arora. As always, lovely to have your company for the Sunrise Radio podcast. And this week, I have another special guest on the show. Here we are. We begin Content Creator Week on Sunrise Radio with our very, very first guest, Tanvi Shah. Welcome to Sunrise. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
I am so happy that you are here today. So, corporate girlie turned content creator. Let's talk about it. Let's dive straight in, Tanvi. Tell me a little bit about your corporate life first.
I did economics at uni, and I feel like everyone that does economics at uni goes straight into that kind of banking and finance route. Both my parents were in finance, so it was very much like this was the given. Mm-hmm. And I'm brown, right? Yeah. So to go into finance, it's like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So I did a grad scheme at a big four firm, and like I qualified as an accountant, so I did all 15 exams. That was kind of like the life I'd set up for myself. Like, this is where I see it going. Mm. It was really good, but I've got to say, there are times in the big four called the busy season. Mm-hmm. And that's like 3 to 4 months throughout the year where obviously you're busy.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'd quite mentally or emotionally prepared myself for how busy you are. And I was working 15, often 18 hour days. Ooh. And like, no matter how mentally resilient you are, that everyone's got kind of boundaries, and everyone gets to a point where they've reached their limit. So I think after 3 years of that, I was just like, this is not sustainable, and no job should be affecting my mental health the way this is.
Yeah.
So I decided to move into consulting for a year.
Right.
So all in all, did about 4 years in the corporate world.
Mm.
But then obviously on the side, I had a few things ticking along. And eventually after 4 years, I ended up quitting the corporate world, which was news in itself, especially in the South Asian community.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad I did it, and I learned so much.
I think that's how I discovered you first. You did a big YouTube video on that, didn't you?
Yes, I quit my corporate job.
Yeah, because when that popped up on my YouTube, I was like, oh my God, wow, that's a really big deal to do that. Because, you know, in terms of like finance, like you get paid well, it's comfortable in that sense. You don't really have to worry about it. But I think making a decision to quit that kind of life, what sort of mentally, what were you going through at the point? I know you said long working hours, but how were you dealing with it in those 3-4 years?
Yeah, I used to leave the office often at like 2-3 a.m.
Ooh.
Get an Uber home from the office, go to bed for a few hours, straight up in the morning, back to the office, and doing that continuously. You don't get weekends, you're working in the evening, and you're revising for exams. I really, by the end of it, I was just not like a human being. I felt like a zombie. I would open my laptop and like have mental breakdowns regularly. Oh. It was really difficult. And I'm someone that's never dealt with any sort of mental health issues, so I didn't know if it was normal and everyone else in my grad scheme was going through it, that this is just what you're meant to do.
Yeah.
Or like, when I did remove myself in hindsight, I was like, that was not normal and no one should be going through that.
Exactly.
So I think, yeah, I just had to draw the line and realise like, life is about being happy and being healthy, most importantly. And if you don't have your health, then you don't really get to benefit in any other aspect.
100%. What was it like being a woman of colour in the corporate world?
The big four in general are quite diverse. Mm. So I think it could have been worse if I was elsewhere.
Mm.
But I do think as women and as women of colour, you kind of got those two challenges in one go that you're dealing with all the time.
Mm.
Sometimes you feel like you're not good enough, or you get really bad imposter syndrome. I still suffer with that. Sometimes you feel like you know, your voice isn't being heard the same as maybe white men in the room. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're having to work twice as hard. So I do feel like there are a lot of kind of nuances that women of colour in the corporate world have to face daily. Mm. And it's something that I think a lot of women in that situation go through. Mm. And I don't think it's something that ever completely goes away. I think the firms are doing a lot more to make sure it is a really inclusive and safe space. And you should be able to speak up if you feel like you've experienced racism or microaggressions. But obviously, it's not always that easy in practice.
Do you think companies nowadays are just doing the whole diversity thing just as a tick box thing? Or are they actually doing something about it?
Obviously, it depends on the company, because I do think to one extent there are companies out there that just do it for performatism, and they'll have X number of employees that look a certain way, so that's a box tick, like you said. But then there are companies out there that truly do care about being diverse, and they want people to bring their authentic selves to work every day and feel like they can be comfortable sharing their culture and family and all these other things that affect your working habits. So I think it really depends on the company, but I think every single company could be doing more.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. But now content creation is the one for you. How easy or difficult is it, would you say?
Oh, that's such a big question. It's as easy or as difficult as you would like to make it.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, got it.
I think it's one of those jobs where you have to do a lot more than you realise, and you have to wear lots of different hats.
Yeah.
So for me personally, I'd never, like, I'm not that creative, I would say, and I'd never filmed a video, I'd never edited a video. So you have to learn a lot of skills very quickly.
Yeah.
But I do think when you learn them, you can do so much with it. So then the world's kind of your oyster in that world.
It's nice, isn't it? Because you get so much freedom of being creative, and like you said, you're not that creative, but still, yet your videos are so, like, relatable. Like, anyone can relate to it, whether it's a parent, whether it's a child, or anybody. But I actually want to talk to you about one of your accounts. They actually got deleted or taken off or whatever it was. You know, you built up quite a following through that. So what exactly happened?
I wish I could tell you exactly why it's been taken down, but we still don't know to this day.
Okay.
So I had, for about 2 years, built up my TikTok account. Mm. It was on about 90,000 followers, which for me was like, I was so close to 100K. And then I was on holiday in Tunisia for Christmas, and there was no signal there, by the way. So this whole situation was heightened stress.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I just got a notification from the app being like, your account's been permanently banned. And often when you get like community violations and warnings, if you get too many of them, it can lead to a ban. I'd never had like any violation, any warning. So we're not sure what's happened. I've been in touch with the TikTok team. We've tried for 6 months basically to get it back.
Mm.
And long story short, we just couldn't get the account back and I had to start from scratch.
Wow.
I actually spoke about this morning in a TikTok, but in hindsight, I feel like it was kind of a blessing because throughout lockdown and COVID, I went really viral for a lot of things that were just like fun and silly and, you know, just talking about brown girl things, which is great.
Mm.
But now I'm at a point in my career where I like truly want to be known for certain things and make a mark in this industry and be a bit more credible and serious as well. So now, because I've started my account from scratch, I've really been able to curate the community and the content that I want.
Yeah.
So even though my following is a lot less, I still feel really proud of like the community I've built on there now. But it just goes to show you can't rely on social media for your money, for your career. You've always got to be building that community offline as well.
Absolutely. Do the number of follows, does that bother you? Like how many you have?
I think it bothers anyone, because at the end of the day, like, some brands will just look at the number of followers you have and that will determine whether you get a brand deal or not. But then I also need to remind myself that my community and my followers, I hate saying the word followers, but my audience is so engaged and literally trusts and respects everything I have to say.
Yeah.
And that is so much more valuable than having like a million followers that do not listen to anything you have to say. So I think having a really engaged community is so much more important, and I would much rather have that than just be going viral all the time.
Now let's talk about the creator space. That's something that you are a founder of. So explain that to me, how that was founded and why you do something that is called the creator space.
Yeah, so the creator space is essentially a network. It's a community for content creators in the UK. And it's founded with myself and two of my friends, Henry and Gabriel. Henry is an ex-lawyer. Gabriel is an ex-investment banker. And obviously I'm ex-finance. We all quit our corporate jobs to do content creation full time, which at the time was obviously quite risky and unheard of. And then we just met up for brunch, and we basically were deciding that a lot of the problems and challenges we faced as now content creators full time, problems that we didn't face in the corporate world, like feeling alone, not having people to go to for advice. There wasn't really a blueprint in the industry of how much we should charge or how to secure brand deals, things like that. So we basically just brought our network together to build this community that has now turned into a business where UK-based content creators can come together, share knowledge, workshops, panels, all this stuff. And it's only been a year, but it's definitely something that we're looking to build so much this year. So it's really exciting.
That's so lovely. And I think you're right. We never had something like that. You know, going back even 3-4 years ago, I don't think there was anything like that. So it's quite nice that you've given the next generation of, you know, anybody who wants to be a content creator, you've given them something to understand and be part of, which I think is really lovely. Now, in your videos, you give us, you know, being happy, healthy, wealthy. So let's start with the first one. What would you say is your idea of being healthy? Not healthy, sorry, happy.
Happy, okay. Yeah. Happiness for me is honestly just creating a day with all my favourite things and all my favourite people in it. So if I can create a life and a job that has all of that in it, then I'm so happy. And like right now, it means I can create content, film videos, which I love doing. I can share stories and knowledge, which I love doing. And I can do it with my friends and my family. So like, I feel like that's a win-win.
That is a win-win.
So that's what makes me happy.
Aww, look at the smile on your face already. you also talk a lot about fitness, and I know you play a lot of tennis as well. Talk to me about how you fit in working out in your schedule, because we all know, like, it's difficult. You know, we've all got things to do. We're always running around, you know, just life, right? And fitting in just that, even though it's just like an hour, half an hour of working out, how do you fit that in your schedule?
It's a non-negotiable for me. So if it's in my calendar, it's not going to move. And I think having things like PT sessions or classes where you're held accountable, like there's a cancellation fee or someone else is relying on you, really helps. I also play team sports, so it's like you don't want to let your team down. So really, it's just become an ingrained part of my routine. And I feel like once a habit just becomes a regular occurrence, it's much easier. And also the feeling I get after it.
Afterwards.
It's so worth it. Like sometimes I'm in bed and I'm like, I cannot be bothered to get out and go play netball right now. But then I come home and I'm like, I feel so good. So it's just reminding yourself and it becomes a lot easier.
It's so easy to feel like that, isn't it? Like, oh, just don't want to go today.
No. And
like, especially like with the weather in this
country.
When it's
cold and dark.
It's just the worst. Yeah.
Honestly, but it's so worth it. The endorphins are real.
Oh, amazing they are. Now, Tanvi, you also have been quite open about your knee injury that you've had. Talk to me about that. Like, what happened?
So I was playing netball at university and then semi-professionally at the time at home. And I tore my ACL, which is basically when the main ligament in your knee snaps in half.
Ouch.
And essentially whenever you walk, your knee just gives way. If you don't care about playing sports, you can just get by doing physio. But for me, I had to get back on the court. So I essentially had a surgery, keyhole surgery, to get my whole ACL reconstructed. It's about a year recovery. And then I got back on the court. 2 years later, I actually tore my other ACL in the other knee.
Oh, no.
So within the space of 3 years, I had two ACL reconstructions, which was probably like one of the hardest things I've ever gone through as someone who enjoys sport. And then also having to mentally get back in the gym to do your rehab, it's really difficult. And that was about 2 years ago now. So, I mean, I'm back. I'm good to go. But it's definitely something that mentally really affected me. And now I have to be so careful and really responsible when I'm playing sports.
Oh my God. So like, how did you get through that mentally? Like, you know, you said it really affected you. I mean, what were the kind of emotions that you went through?
It's really tough because you basically have to teach yourself how to walk again. So physically the pain is unbearable. I always talk about the mental side, but really physically it's the most painful thing you'll ever go through. And I think every day, like forcing yourself to get into the gym, having a really good support system, like my dad would always come and ice my knee for me every day. Like having people around you that hold you accountable is so important. And then I think around 6 months you can start running in a straight line. So after 6 months there's hope. So the first 6 months are really difficult because you can't really move your knee that much. Every day you have to just focus on getting it a little bit straighter, a little bit more bent. You have to keep really busy and find other things that you enjoy. And for me, sports was like my life. So I definitely had to throw myself into more things like work and content creation and just quality time with friends and family just to keep busy. But I mean, I wouldn't be able to play play sports if I didn't do it. So
did you at a point think, I just can't do this anymore? Like, did you feel like giving up?
Loads, because you can't walk. Like, my friends would be going out and I'd be on crutches and like, I can't go. Or like, I miss my own birthday because I would literally had my surgery 10 days before.
Oh my God.
So things like that, like, really do get you down, but then you remember why you're doing it. And if you don't get yourself back in the gym, you're not going to be the athlete you were pre-op.
Yeah.
So post-op, like, the work is a lot, but you have to do it. And I think I've definitely developed a lot of resilience and like, determination since having these ops. And yeah, getting through that, I'm really proud of myself actually for how far I've come, because it's really hard.
It's hard, yeah. I mean, just listening to you talking about it, that is actually like, I'm just thinking, what if that happened to me? I'd just be in tears.
Yeah, really, it was painful emotionally. Yeah. And then to know that I've done it once, and then when I did it again the second time, I was like, oh my God, like, just get it over and done with at this point, because I knew the journey. So the second time was probably harder than the first.
Yeah. And how is it now?
Touch wood, okay, it's touch all good. Wood. I mean, I'm never going to be a semi-pro netballer like I used to be, but I'm physically well and I can do things I enjoy, and like, ultimately that is all that matters.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Right, good. I'm glad. So, Tanvi, let's talk about this, right? Like, I just feel like it's been a bit of a commotion. You buying a house with your boyfriend, like, how has that whole experience been for you so far?
I mean, offline, away from social media, it's so fun. Yeah. Like, it's a very... fun and exciting time of our lives, and I always want that to be at the forefront of this whole part.
Yeah.
It's definitely long, and it's definitely really a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. And I'm someone that comes from like a finance background, and even I am learning all of these new things along the way. Like, buying a property requires a lot of knowledge and a lot of time, so we've definitely learned that. And then obviously I've started creating content and putting it online about this whole journey, and I mean, it's definitely caused some commotion, I'm not going to lie. Like,
so tell me, like, I know, because I've seen a lot of the comments under your videos as well, and some of them are just like, you know, how are you, or why are you buying a house with your boyfriend when you're not even married yet? So how do you answer that question?
It's something that I just didn't think would be that deep, if I'm completely honest. Is it that deep?
That was the deal.
Yeah, I think I've come from a family where everyone is quite liberal. My brother lived with his now wife before they were engaged. So did my boyfriend's brother and his fiance. So I thought it was pretty normal. Obviously, I understand that a lot of people do need to get engaged or married before they're allowed to live with their partners. And I think it's something that is quite traditional within the South Asian community. But for me, it's my life.
Yeah.
And I do value marriage as important, but for this current stage of my life, what makes sense for me and what's going to make me the happiest is living with him. We also live on opposite sides of London. We spend so much time travelling back and forth, and we're in a financial position to do so. So... like, why wouldn't we?
I love it. You're so blasé to the whole thing. It's so funny.
I'm like, it's my life.
Let me just do it. I mean, do these comments bother you? Like, you know, do you care?
I mean, sometimes I think the audacity of some people to be like, put a ring on it first, he's a red flag because he's not committing to you, all this stuff. I'm like, it's my relationship and we're so happy in it. So it shouldn't bother anyone else. But at the same time, I love using my platform and engaging with the comments to like, educate people and create a debate. Like, I love having healthy debate about it. Like, I like hearing other people's point of view, and sometimes it's from a place of concern. Like, a lot of the girls in my comments were like, what if you break up? Like, isn't a mortgage really difficult to get out of as well as a marriage? And so it's like educating people that there's things you can put in place and conversations that you need to have with your partner before committing to something like a property. And I think that's a really good way to like stimulate these conversations.
Absolutely.
So I've actually really enjoyed like creating that sort of content.
It's nice. I like that you have such a positive thinking, given how social media can really go either way. But it's really nice, and I think it's really important for other content creators around now, or anybody who wants to be a content creator, to really actually listen to you, because, you know, not everything has to be taken in a negative way. Like, you've put it so wonderfully that, you know, that it's a very healthy conversation to have, actually. And, you know, it's probably something that, you know, a lot of people are going through or even thinking about it. And I think on that note, what's the big sister advice that you would give to someone listening right now who is in a similar situation, you know, where they do have a partner or they're a little bit scared to tell their parents or, you know, they want to take it a step further? What kind of advice would you give?
I think everyone needs to remember that it is their life that they're living and ultimately they have to do what makes them happy. And sometimes it's not always, you know, you shouldn't be defensive or angry at the people around you if they don't understand, because sometimes all it takes is a conversation or educating people or teaching them that there are other ways to do things. And I think having a conversation is the best place to start.
Yeah.
So I know it can be scary and daunting, but you'll feel so much better after doing it.
Lovely. Yeah. Tanvi, thank you so much for coming in. It was so nice to see you in person. Yeah. I know we have seen each other at other events, but we've never formally been introduced or we've never spoken. So it's nice not to see you on my phone just scrolling.
Sorry about that. But thank you so much for having me. I've loved it.
Thank you so much. And for all of our listeners who want to follow you, just give them your social media usernames.
Handles. Yeah, on Instagram it's at tanvi.x and TikTok it's at tanvi.xxx.
Go follow at xxx. Thank you so much, Tanvi. It was so nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Listen to our Bollywood queen, Anushka Arora, from 12 noon to 4 p.m. weekdays on Sunrise.